Welcome to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. I'm Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss a new study by Kabir et al. Titled, Inorganic Arsenic Induces Sex-Dependent Pathological Hypertrophy in the Heart. This article was published January 22, 2021. Joining us today are host Dominic Del Rey, lead author Mark Kaur, and expert Nicole Purcell. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. And thank you, Mark and Nikki, for joining me today to discuss this work. In the study carried out at Johns Hopkins University, Dr. Mark Kaur and colleagues examined the cardiovascular consequences of inorganic arsenic exposure in the drinking water of adult male and female mice. The authors found that arsenic exposure resulted in increased systolic blood pressure, increased LV mass and wall thickness, and induction of the fetal gene program, all hallmarks of pathological cardiac hypertrophy. Interestingly, these changes were only observed in male mice and not female mice, indicating gender differences in the cardiovascular response to arsenic. The authors went on to examine underlying mechanisms responsible for these outcomes and found that while nitric oxide-dependent mechanisms of cardioprotection remained intact, arsenic promoted calcineurin NFAT signaling, an established regulator of pathological cardiac hypertrophy. The study is significant because it shows that, absent any additional stress, exposure to a relevant concentration of arsenic in drinking water can begin to elicit signs of pathology in the heart. Moreover, it offers insight into sex-based differences in cardiovascular responses to arsenic. Mark, congratulations on the study. I really enjoyed reading this paper, and I'm really excited to discuss it today because it demonstrates clear cardiovascular consequences of arsenic exposure, and also because it provides a mechanistic link between a very important environmental risk factor and cardiac pathology. So having said that, Mark, I'd love to hear about how you first got involved in looking at the role of environmental factors in the development of heart disease.
Thank you, Dominic. I appreciate the wonderful summary there of our work. So just to give you a little backstory, I joined the Department of Environmental Health and Engineering about 6 years ago. And at that time, I had a strong background in cardiac physiology and a desire to expand our research to include the impact of the environment on our heart. I've always had a passion for the environment, and I really thought that this position was great because it allowed me to merge my interest in both fields. And after a review of the literature, it became very obvious to both myself and my research group that the cardiovascular system is actually exquisitely sensitive to environmental factors. So these extend beyond the traditional risk factors that we're used to, like diet and exercise, and they can range from air pollution to heavy metals to pesticides. Nearly everything in our environment can have an effect. For example, things like the built environment or even green space are even thought to influence cardiovascular health. So recent evidence actually suggests that cardiovascular disease is perhaps the leading cause of death from the environment, and that's even more so than cancer and respiratory disease. These effects can range from the promotion of atherosclerosis to arrhythmogenesis to cardiac and remodeling and ischemic injury, which is a primary focus for our group. Now, there are numerous associative studies in humans that support a link between the environment and heart health, but mechanistic studies we notice are really sparse, and that's really the key gap that we aim to fill with our research.
That kind of leads me into my next question, which is, why do you think the majority of our efforts as a field are directed at modifiable risk factors like diet, exercise, and smoking for heart disease? And environmental factors like air pollution and water quality are much less often considered.
That is a great question. Most of our efforts do focus on modifiable risk factors, in part because we know that a healthy lifestyle changes work. We know that these can have a clear impact, whereas the impact of the environment on our health is less understood. So the fact is, if we encourage people to adopt a healthy diet and good exercise habits, and of course, to ditch the cigarettes, we know that we can make a difference. This was really instrumental over the past several decades for dramatically reducing the incidence of heart disease in the U.S. But as we are all aware, the burden of heart disease still remains extremely high, and it seems that environmental factors could be partly to blame. Unfortunately, environmental factors are extremely complex, and they could be a lot more difficult to control, especially since we're still learning which factors and toxicants have the greatest impact on the cardiovascular system and human health in general. It's also important to recognize that environmental exposures are often governed by one's address. And since it's not always possible for someone to move or change their zip code, so to speak, we have to work to identify the critical factors in our environment that are influencing health, and then work to design effective interventions to improve environmental health of all communities, especially those that are most vulnerable.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm wondering, even more specifically, what sparked your interest in studying the effects of arsenic on cardiac physiology and pathology in this study?
So another good question. This one's a little easier to answer. So Rehan Kabir, who is a master's student in my lab at the time, and he's the first author on this study, he was a primary driving force here. So Kabir has family ties to Bangladesh, where arsenic-contaminated drinking water is responsible for one of the largest public health crises in the world. So the issue of arsenic exposure and witnessing it firsthand has really made this a personal concern for Kabir. Arsenic has also been identified by the CDC as a top substance of concern in the United States, with high levels noted in various parts of the country like New England and some of the Plain States. Arsenic is also well associated with cardiovascular disease in human studies. But again, mechanistic studies were really lacking. So that's kind of a general theme with environmental exposures. So we really saw an opportunity there, and we decided to seize on that to really further define the mechanistic impact of arsenic on the heart.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm really glad you did. Nikki, so I'd really like to ask you something here. So a major finding of this study was the pathological hypertrophy elicited in male mice following arsenic exposure. So based on what we know about adverse cardiac remodeling, how do the findings of this study fit with other chronic remodeling models? And how does it advance the field?
Thanks, Dominic. That's a great question. And I want to say thank you, Mark and Dominic, for having me here today to discuss this great paper. And so I think there's a lot of hallmarks that are very similar to pathologic hypertrophy, but I think what's very interesting about this paper are the differences. And so Mark and his colleagues found that, you know, the male mice had increased blood pressure from the arsenic, which had the increased hypertrophy and left ventricle weight and the fetal gene expression, which are all hallmarks of pathologic hypertrophy, which are not seen in the females. But I thought it was quite interesting that while they had a hypertrophic phenotype, there were no signs of fibrosis, or at the time point in which the investigators examined, there was no change in cardiac output or fractional shortening. So their data really suggested that at the time point that they were examining, these hearts of the males, while they were hypertrophic, they were compensating for that hypertrophic growth. And while the signs of pathologic hypertrophy were there at that point, they weren't being decompensated and they weren't going into failure yet. And I thought a very interesting aspect was that while the NO signaling was intact, the male mice did have alterations in downstream targeting of PKG, such as the decreased VASP, which is vasodilator stimulated phosphoprotein. And I really think that's a very important aspect of the paper and suggesting that the male mice intrinsically with their exposure to arsenic have changes within the signal pathway that might be leading to the increases in blood pressure that are seen, and how this might be different from the females is, I think, quite interesting for this paper and something to follow up on.
Yeah, those are really great points. Thanks, Nikki. So Mark, how do these findings of sex-based differences in cardiac pathology to arsenic exposure fit with what we know about gender differences in cardiovascular disease more generally?
I think these findings fit quite well, actually. So as you both are aware, premenopausal women are largely protected from developing various forms of heart disease. And while women do eventually develop heart disease, this protective mechanism typically delays the onset of heart disease by about 7 to 10 years compared to men. We actually find similar protection in our experimental models, with female hearts typically exhibiting robust protection from things like ischemic injury and other stressors. And in our hands, females also seem to be protected from environmental stressors like arsenic and other metals that we've been looking at. So this really suggests that this protection is robust and resilient. And as a research group, we're particularly interested in defining these protective mechanisms within the female heart. And we hope that that will eventually lead to one day being able to target these protective pathways to reduce the incidence of heart disease, perhaps in men and aged individuals, which do not typically display these resilient protective mechanisms and are thus more vulnerable to heart disease. Now, one thing additionally I do want to mention is that if we look at human studies of arsenic exposed populations, both men and women do develop heart disease at higher rates with arsenic exposure. So although in our study, we noted a sex difference, we think that eventually the protective mechanism in the female heart does break down. And perhaps with a longer exposure, we may see this. And I think that is in part what Nikki mentioned with regard to the nitric oxide signaling. The nitric oxide signaling is a very protective mechanism we find both in males and female hearts, although female hearts seem to upregulate that pathway more so than males. So we think that's a large part of the protection that we see, but we do expect that these mechanisms will eventually fail, and we would see, you know, development of cardiac pathology in both sexes at more extended time points.
Nikki, thinking about mechanisms of cardioprotection and differences between males and females in a more global sense, you know, especially in light of NIH commitment to improving research in terms of evaluation of sex as a biological variable and really embracing comparison of sex-dependent responses, what types of things do you think we as a field need to pay more attention to?
Great question. So as of 2015, the NIH set up a mandate where we needed to consider sex as a biological variable, and that became into writing our grants. More and more articles are coming out. There's a lot of great discussion on does sex matter? And I think that we as a scientific community need to look at the differences between males and females. And a big point is that by looking at both sexes, we fail to consider the fact that yes, the females are protected, but we can use that information to better treat both men and women by determining how are the females protected from, whether it be environmental stress or a stress model, why are we protected? Is it just our estrogens or is it something else? And I think that sex differences, of course, do exist. And I think that as a research community, we need to consider sex as a biological variable for both sexes, and we should include these in key experiments. And I think we need to translate what the NIH has done into a lot of the journals. You know, we write it in our grants, but maybe when we publish our research, we're not including females. And I think that we need to justify why we're not using them. And it's a key point to make that while the NIH has said that we need to consider it, sex as a biological variable, it doesn't mean that both sexes can be included in every key experiment we do. But we need to be able to use both sexes and see if there is a difference. And we should be able to look at that data separately and determine if there is and say there is. Because I think as a scientific community, letting others know that, yes, we did see a difference and maybe we could follow up on the females later. But knowing that our model system or what we're using as an exposure stress does have a difference will only help the scientific community.
Thanks, Nikki. So switching gears just a bit, I'd like to touch on the aspect of age and how that might play into this study. So Mark, the current study could be considered a relatively short-term exposure protocol, and it was done in young adult mice. So thinking about the translatability to real-world scenarios, you know, can you comment on how insights from this work could inform potential effects of exposure in younger animals, perhaps even in utero?
Yes. So Dominic, you are correct. We would certainly consider this to be a relatively short exposure model. And in this model, as you know, we exposed mice to a fairly high level of arsenic. This is, of course, an environmentally relevant dose. And we did that for a period of 2 months. And what we observed was substantial remodeling in male hearts is what we would say. But as you mentioned, these were young adult mice. If we were to pursue an in utero model of exposure or even an earlier life exposure, I think we really would expect arsenic to have a greater impact. And in fact, there are a number of studies in humans that do suggest arsenic exposure is associated with congenital heart defects. And as you are all likely aware, congenital heart defects could certainly result in chronic health issues throughout life and into adulthood. That's actually something that we're looking at right now. We actually have an ongoing study examining the mechanistic impact of arsenic on heart development. I don't have any exciting results to share at the moment, so please stay tuned for that. But I also think on the flip side of that, if we think about aged individuals, a lot of the mechanisms that actually protect our hearts from different environmental stressors tend to break down with age, as do most you know, signaling pathways. Physiology just does not work quite as well at old age. So we would expect on the other end of the spectrum, again, for those individuals to be more susceptible to stressors in the environment, whether that's arsenic or whether that's other things, heat stress or anything else that you might think of. To add to that, we're also interested to really add more levels of complexity to our exposure models by examining potentially co-exposures. Initially, you know, we may start simple by using mixtures of different metals that are known to be associated with heart disease. We say that because exposure to a single compound or a single factor in the environment is rare. We are exposed to, you know, dozens of different environmental stressors nearly every second. So it's important to think about the effect of all these exposures together. We're also planning to account for comorbidities, like diabetes or obesity, for example. And again, we would expect that individuals who might be obese or have diabetes, this may exacerbate any, you know, potential environmental impact on our health. And this is a critically important issue since diabetes and obesity are on the rise, both in the United States, but throughout the world. So really, we have to, you know, account for that in our study design.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And the co-exposure experiments sound really interesting too. So just to follow up a bit more on this, you know, even if we don't see overt cardiac phenotypes using certain exposure models, or perhaps in female cohorts, for example, Nikki, how might environmental risk factors still predispose to cardiovascular disease, for example, heart attack or stroke?
That's a great question. And I think it's a good follow-up to Mark's with the aging study. And I think we know that these exposures to polluted air or arsenic can lead to stroke, arrhythmias, because we might start to have underlying increases in plaque formation. It's been shown, especially with arsenic, in Mark's case that he's studying, that high levels and long-term treatment can lead to changes in vasculature, and so leading to vascular dysfunction. And so you would have more plaques, have more atherosclerosis, and of course that would alter your blood pressure and changes in cardiac function, which then lead to things like we talked about, cardiovascular disease such as hypertrophy and heart failure, as well as especially with plaque formation, you can have stroke. I think that we need to understand how these levels, whether it's high levels or even these lower, more environmentally levels that Mark looked at, how they are modifying the heart so that we can understand what the exposure is doing long-term. And I agree with Dominic. I think the complexity with those co-exposure experiments, Mark, will be very important because, again, you might have high levels of arsenic, but also have air pollution particles, or other heavy metals in the water. And so I think it's important for us to understand overall how these environmental risk factors are affecting both the heart itself as well as the cardiovascular system.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Mark, I'd like to ask you, you know, thinking about the scale of these issues regarding environmental factors and links to cardiovascular disease, what are some things, either big or small, that we can do to help mitigate the detrimental effects of these risk factors?
First things first, I like to say that awareness drives action. So I think really a key issue here when it comes to the impact of the environment on our heart health is really identifying the primary factors in our environment that drive heart disease. And from there, we can disseminate these findings to ensure that the general public is informed and aware of the issues. I think it's really at that point that we can work to design effective mitigation strategies to reduce exposure. Now, in the case of arsenic, this is a common drinking water contaminant. And in the United States, the EPA does mandate that levels of arsenic not exceed 10 parts per billion in drinking water. So if your water comes from a public water source, it's likely tested and it's likely in compliance with local drinking water standards. I know in my own case, I get a quarterly report from our local municipality that lists all of the contaminants that they test for, and it basically ensures that those levels are safe within our drinking water. However, if you are an individual that has water that comes from a well, I think it's always a good idea to have your water tested periodically. Just to make sure there's nothing in your water that could be detrimental. Fortunately, in most cases, the installation of a simple water filter can be highly effective. It certainly works very well at removing arsenic and other contaminants. So if you do find those things in your well, there are certainly companies out there that can help you clean your water up. In the case of other environmental factors like air pollution, which is also known to negatively affect our cardiovascular health, both the problem and the solutions are very complex, as you might imagine, and they do require engagement at both the local, state, national, and even international levels to really effectively combat the issues in play. The main point here, you know, is that, you know, awareness is the key issue. And by being aware, we can drive change. And that's really what we aim to do with this study. We wanted to bring awareness to the issue of arsenic and heart health. And I think the field of environmental health, or environmental cardiology, if you will, is really poised to do that, you know, to bring awareness of the factors in our environment which can influence our cardiovascular health. And from there, you know, we can design effective strategies to mitigate toxic contaminants in our environment, or perhaps increase green space, or, you know, any other factors that might promote a heart healthy lifestyle.
So finally, Nikki, I'd just like to ask you, what do you think the basic cardiovascular research field should take away from this study?
Thanks. Mark's lab, you know, used environmentally relevant levels of arsenic, and that using that, he found that there's both a time and concentration dependent effect on the sexes. And so that we saw that in male mice, those mice were much more sensitive to arsenic exposure, and that by 8 weeks, they had increased systolic blood pressure that led to increases in pathologic hypertrophy. And that was not seen in the female mice at that time point. And Mark and his colleagues showed that arsenic was able to activate the calcineurin pathway, which is important for both pathologic as well as physiologic hypertrophy in some cases. But I think a big take home from this is that this study is the beginning of a much larger understanding of the cardiovascular phenotype and trying to understand what is the difference between the sexes, and that maybe in the vasculature of the male mice, they're more susceptible to changes that lead to the increased blood pressure or the problems that lead to the hypertrophy changes, while the female mice have this protection. Now, whether that lasts long-term, that's for future studies for Mark and his lab. But I think we as scientists should take away the importance of sex as a biological variable and how stressors affect them. And really that arsenic itself at this exposure has differences between the male and female heart physiology.
Fantastic. Well, this has been a great discussion. And I'd like to thank you again, Mark and Nikki, for joining me today. And Mark, I'm looking forward to seeing more work from your group in this really important and very relevant area of research.
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.